cold.
Test fail.
Okay, guys, my name is Rachel Garnett. I'm a very grateful recovered cocaine addict.
Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Rachel.
And I've had to get to sobriety since August 3rd, 1998. I'm very grateful for that. Okay, welcome to the open meeting of Fire. Actually, this is going to be the Theater of the Lie here at the Fireline Group of Cocaine Anonymous. Before we begin this meeting with this writing prayer, do we have any announcements? Okay. Now may we open this meeting with a moment of silent prayer, each in their own way, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Cocaine Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from their addiction. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using cocaine and all other mind-altering substances. There are no dues or fees for membership. We are self-supporting for our own contributions. We are not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. We do not wish to engage in any controversy, and we neither endorse nor oppose any outside causes. Our primary purpose is to stay free from cocaine and all other mind-altering substances and help others achieve the same freedom. We use the 12-step recovery program because it has been proven to be successful and practiced in earnest. And I'd like to welcome Joe and Mark here to do the Theater of the Life for us.
Hi, everybody. I'm Joe Hawk, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Joe.
It's good to be here. I feel like I've been in about 200 countries in the last 30 days. It's good to be here with friends. Sometimes when we are asked to talk about inventory, you end up spending a whole lot of time talking about 1, 2, and 3, because people are having trouble with inventory, but as most of you know, they're probably not having trouble with inventory. Unless they just don't know how to write, they're usually having trouble with the propositions that precede inventory, which would usually mean they're having trouble with the idea that their inventory has anything to do with them drinking or using again. We don't have the luxury of that kind of time tonight. So before Mark does one of the, what we were told is called the Theater of the Lie, because what it's going to show you inventory live with people. And a big part of the inventory is investigating what you think is the truth about the lie. What your ego is trying to tell you is true. When we're operating from self, when we're operating from resentment, when we're operating from fear, and how we bring those into relationships. What I would like to say is that there's three things one needs to be convinced of before they get to inventory, and they're outlined very well in the ABCs, which to me is all the work up to that page. Am I convinced that I'm an alcoholic or a drug addict or both? What does that mean to me? I look at the craving. I look at the obsession. I look at, was there ever a sufficient reason that by itself would be enough to keep me stopped? I look at the spiritual malady. Is it true? How is it today with this much time or this for the first time? I look at, do I believe that there's any human power that can relieve my alcoholism or my drug addiction? People that are looking for a way out, people that have reservations in that line, which is B, will usually go to probably. And they'll say to you, see, it says here probably no human power, so I'm going to go check out a few and I'll get back to you as soon as I can, if I'm lucky enough to make it through my next probably alive. And they probably will, or they probably won't. It works both ways. And that God could and would if he were sought. I've never had a problem, even the very first time, with can he? But I'll tell you, every single time, if I have faced the truth about the current situation that I've seen in step one, I have always, every single time, after 20 years, after doing the work many times, I've always had some doubt about, will he, for me, as I am, right here, having just faced all of this in the first step, which is usually the manifestations of page 52, will he take me past here? And I explore that doubt. And there's where my current agnosticism comes from. There's where the fears come up. And since we're not going to talk a lot about the fear inventory or the sex inventory, which a lot of you know, the sex inventory isn't just about sex, especially for older gentlemen. it's about relationships. The book is very clear. We subject each relationship to this test.
Joe, one.
Right.
Was it selfish or not? And you answer those 9 questions. I would challenge anybody in this room who believes that their relationship with God is an important relationship. Next time you're in inventory, answer the 9 questions on your relationship with God. It's an eye-opener. Fear, I've done enough fear inventory to know this, that whether considering the propositions in the first 3 steps, whether seeing that the resentment inventory by the end of the 4th column shows you that behind every resentment you're really afraid, or whether you see it in the fear inventory itself, I can tell you from my experience that for me, I have found that behind every fear is a reservation that self can do something about the fear which I'm experiencing. Every fear I have has to do with self-reliance. So whether I'm reviewing the first 3 steps, because here's the proposition. Is it possible to come to the second step, choosing God as everything or nothing, exactly the way the book says we should, fearlessly, without fear? Because if I'm afraid of drinking again, if I'm afraid of what I've seen in the first step, if I'm afraid of the stuff that's behind my agnosticism, how can I possibly fearlessly face this proposition? And if you can face those fears in the second step, based on the work you've done up to that proposition of choosing everything or nothing, face those fears, look through them. Behind each and every one of them will be a lurking notion that self-reliance will work where that fear is concerned. Fear is about self-reliance. So I review those proposals. I ask myself, am I convinced? I check out where I am with the first requirement of the third step. How successful has it been running my life? Where I'm running my life on self-will. Does that mean your whole life's run on self-will? Does that mean you don't have any trust or any faith? No. It just means from what you've currently seen in the first step, the current unmanageability, what you've seen in the second step, which would be your current agnosticism and doubt, what you've seen about those fears, leads to running life on self-will. Because if I have it, if I see the fears behind the unmanageability, if I see the fears behind the agnosticism, and I can see through those fears, I'm going to see self-reliance, which leads to self-will. Then you're going to see it in black and white, in the inventory, that Mark's going to show how it plays out. One other thing. What I do now with the 4th column, in whether it's resentment or fear inventory, I stay in the 4th column and I pray and I pray and I pray until the 4th column turns the first 2 columns into a lie, until I can rewrite the first 2 columns. It's not hard to see that the 3rd column, if you write it out, which he's going to show you graphically, if you write out the 3rd column, it's not hard to see that those are lies. But sometimes you will finish the 4th column still thinking that the person in the first column and the reason you were mad in the second column is still the truth. But I can assure you, I've had the last 3 inventories, I stay in the 4th column until I can rewrite the first 2 columns. And every one of them is either a resentment toward myself or a resentment toward God.
Evening, everybody. I'm Mark Houston. I'm an alcoholic. Sobriety date is October the 19th of 1982. It's good to be here this evening. Different. I had to pray when I was asked to do this. but apparently your group conscious said do it. So, and the reason is we're going to present a concept and a theory to you. I will make reference to many aspects of it in the big book. There is a group in Denver, Colorado that had probably done more work with the four-step than probably any group of men and women I know. They're probably 80 strong, and probably average length of sobriety in their home group is probably 13 to 15 years, a lot of people in their 40s. So I pay a lot of attention to what they say. And one of the guys in that group is called Big Frank, and I guess they were around 13, 14, 15 years sober. They kept discovering they would write inventory, and then the stuff they were seeing would come up again. You all had that experience? They kept thinking, you know, there's something wrong with this picture, you know, because it's about facing, be rid of it, cast out. And so they really started looking, and they, in particular, after you get through writing that third column where you have self-esteem and ambition and security, and they all of a sudden one day clicked in and said, you know, the next page and a half is really talking to us. It looks to us like it's about the third column. And maybe we're missing some. And they really started looking at that third column, and they started getting into other spiritual books. And out of that, this thing developed that they called Theater of the Lied, and they developed a method of writing inventory that we call, for lack of a better word, an extended third column. How many of you have written inventory in this room? Raise your hands. Okay. And a lot of you, when you wrote inventory, probably when you get to the third column, you would write the word self-esteem, right? We'll say that column one is her, and column two is she left you, and column three is that affect my self-esteem. And normally that is probably about how you felt, correct? And you probably just wrote the word self-esteem, and you probably sat and did a fifth step, and you talked about how bad you felt. And then under ambition, you know, you wanted to be in a good relationship, and all that other horse shit that you wind up writing in that format. And something about that didn't make sense. And what didn't make sense is the big book says, you know, I have to quit playing God. And so they begin to look at the idea in the third column that maybe there was so much more there that they could not see. And that's somewhat of what we're going to show you tonight. You know, and there's some... First of all, I want to show you how these stage characters... Remember there's a line, we get ready to do a fifth step, that we present our stage characters to the world. I do want to take a minute. I want to show you how your stage characters develop. This is a room full of men and women. I can pick any one of you, and you'll have about eight stage characters that you think define who you are. So I'm going to talk about that. And as I talk about this, understand that as these identities that you think define who you are begin to develop, every one of these identities begins to develop their own set of belief systems and wants and needs and values. And basically what I want to show you this evening is what the big book means when, number one, when it says resentment is the number one offender. I began in 1991 to do a tremendous amount of work with inventory because that line caught my attention, that resentments destroy more alcoholics and drug addicts than anything. We don't talk about it much. It's in the book. There was another line in inventory that caught my attention that's never talked about anywhere. And that is that as you, we turn back to the list, for it holds the key to my future. Wait a minute. I think we ought to be talking about, what are they talking about? The key to your entire future is contained within this list. What do they mean by that? So I really began to look at that, and what I'll tell you about that, I don't know how many times I've written inventory since 91. I would say that I've read inventory somewhere between 50 and 70 times. So if you want to get experience with inventory, write inventory. You want to get experience with fifth steps, listen to fifth steps. So then I want to show you what you're up against. And there's other spiritual books that make reference to this, but from the time you're born, right away, the first identity you're going to get outside of yourself is you're going to be either the son or the daughter, correct?
Right.
Because you got mom and dad. And then you're going to be a brother or a sister, correct? Okay, and
then from there, let's just fast forward and you start to get in school, and then the next thing that character, that identity begins to develop is a friend. You'll go along a little bit further, and somewhere in there, you're going to be a boyfriend or girlfriend, right? Now, if you're a male, what happens in junior high and high school, normally there's about three or four different places you're going to move. You're either going to be a jock, you're going to be a nerd, you're going to be hip, slick, and cool, you know, smoke pot, whatever, right? Hip, slick, and cool. And then there was a group I was in. It's just, I don't know, what are we? We're just not in the middle of anything. What do we call it? What do we call it? You know what I'm talking about. You're semi-invisible.
Floater.
That's a great idea. See, and that this will become an identity. You can tell any of these in meetings. These guys and gals are always up in the front row. They're aggressive, they're assertive, they're whatever. This is the guy that takes the big book, rewrites it 92 times in your meetings. He doesn't say much or she, but by God, they look good. You know, just in and out at the back of the room and in the middle, and you know, they're just kind of like that. So, and then you go along and you get out of high school and then you go on to college, and then somewhere in here, you're going to meet the fiance, or you're going to get married, and so now you've got a husband and you got a wife. There's a couple more that I'll talk about. One is the stud, and for lack of a better word, we'll call it the little sex kid. These people have different agendas. You know, for any of you who've ever been married and the husband or wife cheated on you, the husband or wife did not cheat on you, but the stud and sex kid would in a minute because they got different agendas. Okay? If you have kids, now you've got mom and you got dad. Now there's 168 hours in a week. Most people work. So you got this career person, correct? We'll call it the career person. By the way, it's interesting. We wonder why we got a 60% divorce rate. If you got 168 hours in a week and you're sleeping 56 and you're working 50, that's 107, and you're going to meetings and doing whatever, the husband and wife may get about 5-6 hours with each other. They wonder why the relationships don't work. Or we wonder why we're poor parents, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But, so, one of the things as we do theater of the lie to keep in mind is how much time do you spend in this respective role? That's critical. And I'll share a little experience I had with that. Now, here's the other thing that happens, of course. Now we got the alcoholic addict. We got another role, right? And then you get sober. Now we got, let's just call it Mr. or Ms. AA. Get sober, you got a whole new identity going on, right? One day you're drinking, you're doing dope. Now you come into CA, you get clean. Now you got a whole new one. Of course, you know, this person's interested in spiritual stuff. You know, loving their fellow brother, you know, all that neat stuff, right? I think that pretty well would define, each of us, men have a Rambo, and women have a Xena. So I don't think if there's any other major character states. Can anybody think of any others that you think define who you are? Is that pretty well across spectrum, right? Okay. So the big book uses some phrases I want to tie into some of the stuff. Number one, when I write inventory, I try and identify which stage characters are hurt, threatened, or interfered. Now, I'm going to take myself, and I'll tell you the different stage characters that I have in my life. I have Mr. AA, spiritual man. He's one. I'm a jock. You know, I ran before I came over here.
I work, I'm CEO of a company, okay? Let's see, I guess we're speakers, aren't we?
Yeah,
circuit speakers, isn't that cute? So that's another one. I'm a writer, that's another one. I went through an interesting phenomenon when both my parents died. Felt real weird for a couple months, couldn't figure out why. And you know why? Because when your parents died, he didn't exist anymore. I'm a Vietnam vet. Rambo is very active in me. Right? Those are some of my major states. And when I write inventory, and I recently wrote inventory, whatever I put in column one, begin to write in column two, I ask myself which stage character felt hurt, threatened, or interfered. So most of the inventory I wrote recently had to do with work. So who do you think was hurt, threatened, or interfered with?
Yeah.
Exactly. There's some lines in the big book I'll make reference to, and then I'd like to take one of you, and I want to show you this thing. When you get through looking at the first three columns in the big book, or you go to write it, the big book makes some very interesting statements about this. It talks about we're going to get down to causes and conditions. And if you look those two words up, your second column, why you're resentful, would be the causes of your resentment. And the third column is the condition. And the word condition refers to a state of being. These are states of being. And there's a line a little bit further down the book, and here's what it says, is in that state, one of these, the wrongdoing of others, fancy, I made it up, or real, it happened, has the power to kill me. To kill me. What do they mean? See, what do they mean by that? So I'll ask a question. How many of you have been in either a marriage or a relationship and it ended and you thought you were going to die? Those of you who didn't raise your hand are liars. Or your sociopaths, we can't help either. See, if you're a husband and a wife comes home and she says, I want a divorce, what does a husband need to be to exist?
A wife.
Exactly. And when she says, I want a divorce, he does not experience she wants a divorce. He experiences death. Death. See? In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancy or real, has the power to kill. I'm going to tell you one little story, and then we'll have some fun. Inventory's fun for me. If you have this belief system that inventory is some arduous, painful process, I hope to pull you free from that tonight. Most of the time it looks like a little four-year-old, somewhat immature four-year-old, wrote my inventory. Inventory can be fun, and I hope to show you that tonight. But I'm going to tell you a little story about the reality of this stuff. I got a pal down in Houston, and about a year or so ago, he sent me a newspaper, half a page, Houston Chronicle. And there's a story in there, and that story had to do with a couple who were married. He was fairly prominent in that city. And he came home one day, and he informed his wife that he was going to get a divorce, that he had a younger girlfriend. The article went on to say that what she did is that they spent a lot of time in the article talking about their beautiful home. And her friends, quotes from friends, said she really loved her home. And she was a great mother. She was a devoted wife and a devoted church member. So there were four things. The article went on to say that the divorce got a little nasty and he wound up, looked like he was going to get custody. I don't know how he did this, but somehow he got in the house. She got moved out. And then here he is, he's getting divorced and married to a younger woman. And the reason this article was in the paper is this woman had taken a gun and she had killed her children and she killed herself. Is this stuff real? You better believe it's real.
when he came home and said to her, I'm out of here. She had four states of being that she thought defined who she was. And when he said that to her, they're all gone. She was fighting for her life. Right? Does that make sense? I have my own experience, and then we'll do some stuff here. When I got sober in Denver, I went to work for a company there, and I was working 60 to 80 hours a week. And I worked for them eight and a half years. And I resigned that position in about a year, year and a half later. I just almost checked out of here. And after I got through that experience and started doing a lot of work with inventory, I realized at that time that about 80% of my identity came from that job because of 168 hours in a week, that's where I was spending all my time. I was so identified to that job and I was no longer in that job that I experienced my daily life as though I was dying and didn't even know it. Didn't even know it. Almost took myself out of here behind that. And that's why when I started getting this information and I began to take a look at inventory and I began to write inventory in this fashion, I became a free man. I lost my attachments to any roles. My life is a lot of fun today. I get up in the morning and I go, oh, we're going to start out being the spiritual man. We're going to do a little prayer and meditation. If I go run, then we're going to shift out again into the jock. And the jock's going to go run and come back, and then now we're going to drive out to the company I work for, and we drive in the gate. Now I get to be the CEO. Then you go down and you give a talk. Oh, now I get to be the talker. But you see, I'm not attached to any of it. You can take all of it from me, because none of that is who I am. But it almost killed me. Okay? Ending of relationships has almost broke my heart in two. Let me tell you how that looks today. God bless you. Go in peace. There's 2.5 billion of them out here. Snap! Job is boom. You follow me? Because none of that defines who I am, because it almost killed me. So, you get the idea, you get the concept. Okay? So, what I would like to do, is there anyone here who's recently written some inventory they'd be willing to let us have a little fun with? Anybody? Who's recently written some inventory? They're trying to prod you, Catherine. If I don't get a volunteer, I'll pick someone. But just so you know this, I can pick anyone in here. Doesn't make any difference. But has anyone recently written inventory they'd like to? Okay, come on up here.
All right, Pete.
No, Pete!
All right. Now, you know, when I switch this on, I turn mine off, and then we just work off this, right? Okay. Test, is that working?
Yeah.
You can hear that okay. All right. So, Keith, tell me what's in column one.
Mom.
Who's writing this inventory?
Son.
Okay, we got the son, right? Now, as we do this, I want you to think about some things. Imagine that you're just the son. The son has a set of belief systems, needs, wants, and values that began very, very early in life. Okay? And obviously this inventory is going to reveal that some of those needs are not being met, or something's hurt, threatened, or interfered with. So what is column two on mom?
She beat me as a kid.
Okay, she beat me as a kid. Okay, what else?
Controls me.
She controls me. Okay, what else?
Does things with my money without asking me.
Okay, does things with my money without asking me. Okay?
Favors my older brother.
Oh, I understand that. Okay, so we got a son, we got a brother, don't we? Okay? Anything else? What other ways is she?
Controls me.
She, yeah, we got that.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, that's two times.
That was the jock in that one.
And I was a dog.
That was the main four.
Okay. Petrosia, how old are you?
42.
Okay. Okay. We have the attic. Okay. We got the son. We got the brother. We got the attic. Now there's a money issue. So we got career man. He's a little bit in there. Of course, and you at one time you had what 9-10 years sobriety, right?
9 and a half.
Oh yeah, we got mystery. See, I don't know if you can see this already, but we got some conflict going on here. There's some conflict going on. See, I mean, Mr. AA couldn't be writing this kind of stuff because, after all, Mr. AA, forgive and forget, and people are just spiritually sick, and you know, everybody can. But he's conflicted here a little bit, right? Okay. Anything else on your mother? Here's what we got. She beat you as a kid. By the way, when they ask for a topic in a meeting, an open meeting, here's the topic, Scala 2. That's what we get to talk about in our meetings. Yeah, right? So, beat me as a kid, controls me, does things with my money without asking me, and then favors my older brother. Now, I'm going to give you the mic a minute because I want to ask you a few questions, okay? How can she do things your money without me asking you? How is it she controls your money?
I gave it to her.
Yeah. What was the reason you gave her the money?
I was afraid I'd spend it on her.
Tell me about your older brother. Is he an addict? Is he
an alcoholic?
Okay. Is he in recovery?
No.
He's acting. Okay. But she favors him.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the controls me, could you elaborate just a little bit? Because you're 42, 43 years old, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you live at home?
No.
Okay. How does she control you?
She controls me by me always needing her.
Me needing her. Okay. Good, good, good. Okay, so let's go to the third column. You got self-esteem, right?
Yeah.
Self-esteem is how I see or feel about myself. And the two most creative words on the planet are I am. So when we write our third column, we like to start with the words I am. And then we like to fill in. And typically when you're writing self-esteem, there are two components to this. See, how many of you written inventory where your third column looks like you're into self-pity?
Yeah.
Okay? See, there's a problem with that. Here's why. Self-pity and plain God don't fit the same box. So your third column should never reflect a victim stance. Your third column should reflect, how are you playing God? How are you playing God? You understand? Because if in fact it was just a victim stance, you'd just be saying, well, I got what I deserve. But you're resentful. Resent means to revisit. You're angry. And the reason you're angry is you're playing God. High self-esteem.
Yeah.
Not low self-esteem. High self-esteem, right?
And if low self-esteem was the truth at the core of your being, you wouldn't be angry. You would just sit there. I don't deserve you anyway, honey, as she walks out the door. Low self-esteem is a big lie that's sold to us in relationship to a resentment like this. It's usually based on just a little too much self-esteem.
Okay, so, under self-esteem, I am. In order to write the second column, you're playing God, you're sitting in judgment. So let me ask you some questions. Do you view yourself as someone who's non-controlling? No. Treats others equally?
No.
No? Okay. When you see the word self-esteem and the word I am, how would you fill in the blanks? It's self-esteem in relationship to what you've written is how you see and feel about yourself. What would you fill in under I am?
I am low.
Go ahead.
I am low.
You're what?
Low.
Okay, I'm an addict, right? I'm irresponsible.
I am non-deserving.
Okay. This is good. Okay, what else under I am? I'm non-deserving.
I'm scared.
I'm low. I'm scared. Okay. Here's what's interesting. He resents her, yet he's presenting low self-esteem. You see something wrong with this picture? Because he's really starting to get angry about the fact she's spending his money without his permission and approval. So see, this is the trap of the ego. There's a part of him that's saying this, but it's not true. You're angry about she's doing that, aren't you?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah. Let's go on a minute. Pride is how others see you. You start out with no one should. Fill in the blank.
No one should see my mother controlling my money.
Bingo. No one should see my mother treating me like this. No one should see that my mother favors my older brother. No one should see that my mother beat me as a kid. Okay? Ambition. Tell me, this is where I want you to touch your selfishness. Begin with I want. Tell me what you want. I mean, really touch it.
Everything.
You want her begging you for your forgiveness for
right.
what she did?
Right. Give me extra money for taking mine.
Yeah. Good. See, now, you see a little, I want you to understand why the book says resentment's killing more alcoholics than anything else. This is a little bit different than what we started out with. You hear what he's saying? Well, he started out with, I'm an addict, I'm non-deserving, I'm scared. That's a little different than what I just heard come out of his mouth. We got a little conflict going on here. See? I drink and do dope behind that kind of conflict. See? He's going back. We just heard his ramble come out, didn't we? What else do you want from her?
All the love and attention.
All the love and attention. Selfishness, right? Love everything, I gotta get rid of my selfishness. Now, let's go even further. Security. Now I'm going to show you how this... What I need to be okay. So, here's the way I write this. I need blank to be okay. So fill in the blanks.
All her love and attention and all her money.
To be okay. Yeah. You notice you don't much care that you beat him anymore. Now, a therapist has a lot of fun with that stuff. Right? But if you notice, it just isn't uncommon out anymore. See? Money. I am my money. Right? Personal relations is same-sex relations. That's kind of maybe friends. How your friends view you, right? And then you've got sex relations. Sex relations could be your belief systems around women. Mothers shouldn't treat sons this way. Mothers should be fair. Correct?
Yeah.
See, the son has written a script of how a mother's supposed to be, correct? We play God. She's written the script. What does it look like? She should be kind, loving, treat everyone equally, raise him in a loving, nurturing, caring home. You got to give him some money. See, that's all he has. He's long past any of that. Now we're getting down to basics. He just wants the money. But you see, remember when Joe made a statement? Because I'm going to do one of these boy-girl ones. But you remember when Joe said, we haven't even written the fourth column. Are you getting some idea how your fourth column can roll out of writing like this? You see his selfishness? You see his dishonesty, his self-seeking, right? His self-centeredness? You see how that rolls out? Do you see that based on everything he said already, this evaporates, doesn't it? She doesn't control him. Through his selfishness, through doing dope and doing everything else, he gave up all rights to his money and everything else. He gave up any right to control his own life. Because he was irresponsible, didn't he? That's a lie, right? Of course, we already know about the money. He gave the money because he was afraid to death. He'd spend it all on... He gave it to her and he gave her control of the money. That's a lie.
Based on what he's told us so far, no wonder she favors the older brother. First part. You don't touch that. There's nothing about that that's okay. Yeah. But here's the deal. He's not a kid anymore. That's why I asked him, home or do you live at home? What has he done with this since that happened? See, what has he done with this information? See, it's like I was a Vietnam vet. How much mileage I got out of that? Bingo. To feed my own selfishness. Correct? See, this is not a bad judgment about is this right or wrong. Of course this is wrong. The book goes on to say why this happens. This is what spiritually sick people do, don't they?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this woman didn't wake up one day and said, I got nothing else to do. I think I'll beat on Keith. Now, I suspect, knowing Keith like I do, I suspect Keith probably took a pursuit, a course of action that perhaps made it very difficult for her not to be dead. I mean, I looked at my childhood. I wouldn't want to rape me. Right?
But we've recently been in New York, and we do know that there are people that do wake up in New York and say, I don't have anything better to do today. I think I'm going to beat on them. But we've yet to do one of these things where someone won't say, in the fourth column when we get to it, how does a 7-year-old, 8-year-old, 9-year-old, totally innocent, totally pure child see their part in the fourth column for being beat, molested, horrible things that go on in the world? You don't see your part. You were pure, innocent. You look at what you did with it for the next 20 or 30 years that was selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and rooted in fear.
Right. Okay, give Keith a hand. Somebody recently done inventory on a relationship that ended?
I don't.
Oh. Yeah! Woo-hoo! Go, Cop!
Now I'm going to pretend with you. Do the opposite at the same time with a her that's recently...
Me? Huh? Do we have a lady in the audience who's recently had a relationship end?
Oh, come on.
All the
time.
Okay. We're going to do something different. This time, I happen to know this man. I sponsor him, so I have way more material there. So, we want to bring up his host of characters that he thinks identifies him, okay? So, I want you to pick a male. I need you to move over here a little bit more. Make a little room. It's going to be a little tight, but we'll do this. I need you to pick someone to play the husband. Pick a man to play the husband.
Sal.
Sal, come on up here. Now, when I ask you to play these roles, here's the deal. You're in a one-act play. No, just stand here. Your sole character is the husband, period. Nothing else. You've got the belief systems of a husband. Your reaction is going to be that of a husband, period. Okay? So you're going to be the husband. You're going to be that character in the one-act play. You happen to be a husband, so I know you can do this very well. Okay? We need Mr. A, the spiritual man, to choose someone. Okay. Now, I want to show you something else. If you're a man, I want you to pick the, we'll call it the stud / single guy.
We'll pick one.
Okay. Now,
you've got too many characters.
Yeah, that's okay. No. That's why we're going to limit it below. Obviously, when a relationship ends, money quite often gets involved. So we need someone to represent your money.
Yeah. Let's go with
Gangrel. Come on up.
Yeah, the Cadillac.
So let's see. Let's see what other, I'm trying to think of one of the main curses. Of course, we got the adding sitting here. So we got money. I'll say that's money and career, right? You're what again? You're the spiritual guy.
That's right.
Well, you're the husband. Okay? So, how about you?
Rambo's a jock.
Oh, yeah, he's got a big time jock. Well, I'll let the stud and the jock be the same. Hey, but do pick one guy to be Rambo.
Oh.
And what I'd like you to do is, I want you to kind of tell the audience, if you will, how it came about, where this idea was that this relationship was going to end. I want them to have some idea of the scene, if you will.
Okay. We got married like a year and a half ago. Moved to Dallas. She got loaded. And then everything kind of started to go downhill from there. And everything blew up time and time and time and time again, and we'll see if it happens again.
Okay. So some of your second columns could be everything from she relapsed, right?
Stayed out all night.
Okay. So she relapsed. So let's, I'll write a couple. Go ahead and tell me. So she relapsed. She stayed out all night. We got some inventory. Okay. Doesn't work the program.
Yeah.
Not fiscally responsible.
Can't keep a job.
Doesn't clean the house. So let's lay out this scenario. Let's start first of all. I want to give you the reaction initially. I just want to start. Now you guys all remember your roles, okay? And I'm going to start with the first one, that she's relapsed. Now within each of these stage characters, so we got the stud. And you're coming in.
He's your money.
Stud. Spirit of man. Husband. Rambo. Okay. Mr. Violence. Within each character, there are two. How many of you read the book Don Miguel Ruiz, Four Agreements? There's a judge and a victim. Behind the relapse, initially, the first reaction, what was it? Was it anger or pain? When you first heard it.
Anger.
Okay. So the judge, so here's what I want you guys to do. I want you to respond to this information. You don't know each other exists. You've got your own identity. You're fighting for your own existence. Okay? So we'll start with you. You're the husband, right? And she's just reported to you. How'd you find out?
She lied. I saw it. She lied about it for 2 weeks. And then she got really, really, really fucked up and couldn't talk or be coherent at all, and so I kind of knew, and so she kind of told me.
Okay. So I want to, tell me your reaction when your wife, because they were both in AA, by the way, they were going to be the AA couple that the universe always looks at. Tell me your reaction about she got loaded.
How come my wife let me down like this?
Okay. Victim. That's the victim side, right?
Right.
What does an AA husband need from an AA wife? She's got to be working a solid program, blah, 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 blah. She got voted. Right? Okay. Now we got the spiritual man. What's your reaction?
She's the precious child of God, and I should let her do what she needs to do.
Keep stuff in mind. He's sitting home alone and this dialogue is going on. The reason I know is about 15 minutes after this started, he called me.
Yeah.
And I got to talk to different stage characters for about a half hour. Okay?
Now, what is...
Mr. Stud.
Yeah, Mr. Stud. What is your reaction to this? Now, there's a component of this. She was out all night. Correct?
Right.
Now, what defines him is sexual powers in bed. Do you think he's got a little bit of fear going on that she was out all night? So what's your reaction to this?
Here's the reason for me to get out of the marriage and do what I want to do.
Okay, that's one piece of it.
Right.
But then what's the other piece? You're threatened.
Right.
She's out all night. Because after all, you know, you're...
That's with another man.
Yeah.
Right.
So how do you experience that? How does that make you feel?
Insecure.
Bingo. Talking to the mic.
Insecure.
I'm insecure. I'm not good enough for her to come home to.
Right.
Oh, my God. My masculinity. My sexuality. Mm-hmm. Right?
Found somebody better.
See? Found someone better.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, now you're the money man, right?
No, he's the money man.
Ah, okay. Why don't we talk about how you feel about this, because you can see where this bus is going.
It cost me a lot of money. It's all her fault.
Bingo. His money defines him, gives him security, gives him, right?
Okay. I'm going to have to lock it.
You're going to have to what?
I'm going to have to lock my shit up.
Yeah, so you don't sell it, right?
I'm the Rambo. I think at first I would probably react by... I can fix this shit.
Yeah.
And then I would say, screw her, mm-hmm. I'm taking off.
Okay. Yeah, exactly.
I'm taking off her head.
Exactly. Now, I'll tell you something else that starts to shift and move as he went through this for a while. Pretty soon, this character, Judd, he thought this was okay. He realized there's 2.5 billion women out there to choose from. So he started to get excited, right? So money man still had struggles. Spiritual man had a lot of struggles. But what's he do? He's supposed to, what do we learn in AA?
He's
sick, blah, 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 blah. So he has all this conflict going on. Now here's what happens. He gets up in the morning, and he starts his day doing his prayer and meditation. And then in between his prayer and meditation, imagine the committee meeting. When you hear him talk about the committee meeting, this is the committee, ladies and gentlemen. You all got yours. See, you can't have any integration. There's no peace in this. Now, Adept, you think these things define who you are, which is why there's claw marks all over this stuff. I don't care if it's a job, a relationship, your image of yourself, there's claw marks. That's why you can't let go of anything. You follow? This is why in that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancy real, has the power to kill you. This is why the book says resentment is the number one offender and destroys more alcoholics. Can you imagine the pain, the conflict, and the turmoil? Right? That he went through. And I know that because I'm his sponsor. I know what he went through with this. This was conflicted. The reason you're writing inventory is you're trying to get pulled free. You're trying to get to let these die. To realize, to integrate yourself. To realize who and what you truly are. Now I want to leave him there a minute. And then I want to move over here. And then as we move toward the end of this, I want you to imagine what it's like when boy meets girl in AA. And you wonder why we have relationship up. So tell us a little about your story. Go ahead and grab the mic.
And you left me because I went out and got hot.
Ah, you relapsed. Oh, you relapsed?
That's perfect because she did what you resented.
Okay, so give me some of your resentments toward him. Okay, you all got that. She relapsed. Okay, so he left me because I got high, right?
Yep.
Okay. Why else do you resent?
Because he wasn't there for me.
Oh, isn't that?
Oh,
I like that.
Oh.
No man knows what that means. There at the right time when you're supposed to go. You're there.
Yeah.
Right. Once she asked me for space. I went to Las Vegas for 3 days. I came back. She said, not that much space.
Yeah. Hey, what else? He left me because I got high. He wasn't there for me.
Oh, you're supposed to somebody.
Oh, Cancun and he slept. Okay, he went to Cancun without me. And then he slept with somebody. We got some information. Okay, so now I need you to choose some ladies. Keep in mind, by the way, I want you to think about something. The alcoholic addict is standing back behind all these characters, and as they're going through the pain or whatever, he or she is slowly doing something like this.
Let's get loaded.
Just goes from one to the other. We're in all this pain. Let's get loaded. We're in all this pain. Let's get loaded. Just screaming all the time. Because you see, for him to be sober, the practicing alcoholic addict doesn't exist, does he? Right?
And we go to the meeting and we share about the symptoms, which he said. We go and share about the second column. And we're writing it, we're putting it down on paper, and we don't have a clue that right behind each of those is a drink or a hit of crack.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So let's need you to pick some women. I would like you to pick the girlfriend.
Kathy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Kathy, come on up here. We, of course, you're the addict. I need you to pick the sex kitten. Do you all get this? Perfect. I was loving it. Do you all get this that the boyfriend and girlfriend and husband and wife are completely different from the sexual energy piece? Do you all get that? Do you understand that piece? It's important you understand this piece. I'm going to say this. The husband has never cheated on the wife, and the wife's never cheated on the husband. Because a husband, what is a husband's belief systems? I'm to be monogamous, committed, till death do us part. The husband, it is impossible for the husband to cheat on the wife, because it's no part of the belief system. Then over here you got the stud. Oh, another agenda. Right? You understand what I'm saying? See, if you don't break this stuff down, you have no integration. Same with boyfriend, girlfriend. The boyfriend would not cheat. Stud would in a moment. You follow me? Because what would be a boyfriend's belief systems? Did you have an agreement that you would be monogamous and committed to each other?
And
there's
a mock
out there,
of course.
See? You understand what? You see the difference? Follow me? So, I want you to understand that. So, that's why I distinguish between, call it the sexual energy versus the girlfriend. Because they have completely different agendas. Does that make sense? What are the components, how were you, all your parents, so you got a daughter. Yeah, well, was your fiance, correct? Mm-hmm. So, your parents were impacted by this breakup. Yeah. Were they? Okay, so I picked someone to play the daughter.
Molly.
See, and these aren't just any old girlfriend or any old sex kitten or any old daughter. This is the perfect daughter, the ultimate girlfriend, and the greatest sex goddess in the world.
Mark,
yeah.
check your mic, your son.
Yeah, it's on. Test. I mean, yeah. Her basic philosophy, for example, in terms of the sexual energy, goes like this. Once you've tasted the waters of the Nile, no other water will quench your thirst.
You know what I'm saying?
So when this kind of stuff happens, fighting for my life. I'm fighting for my life, my very, very existence, right? So let's see. I'm trying to think. Of course, in the middle of this, you've got this Miss AA spiritual woman you're developing, right? Correct? So pick one woman for that.
Kelly.
Okay. So go ahead and stand over there. That's fine. All right, now let's go back to something. When did you get the information that he went to Cancun and slept with someone? By the way, how did you get that information?
He told me.
Okay. And so here's what I want to go back to. I want you all's reaction to that information, right? So now you know what your role is, right? You're the, actually, the fiancé has more power. It's a whole other deal, right? So fiancé is different than a girlfriend,
oh, yeah.
right?
Oh, yeah.
Deeper commitment.
Oh, yeah.
The hooks are deeper.
Yeah.
Well, now what you think about this. The belief systems, shift when you go from girlfriend to fiancé, am I right?
Yes.
That's my experience.
Yes.
I went through a shift, right? So I want to know your reaction when you heard that he went to Cancun and slept with another woman.
You prick!
Okay. Because that information said you don't exist, right? You see, you don't exist, right? Okay. Now, what's your reaction to that?
I'll show him. I'll go get somebody else.
Okay.
Or,
that's one part.
Or, yeah. The other side of it is, oh my God, I must not be good enough.
Bingo.
Yeah.
That's going to be her initial one.
Yeah.
The other one she talked about certainly will rear its head. Now you're the daughter, and of course your parents, you guys are engaged, so obviously there's a wedding being planned and talked about. Okay. So yeah. Right. You hear what she did? You just, daddy, right? Scream of that. Now, you were in sobriety for a little bit, right? When you got this news, right?
Right.
So you've got this spiritual woman. So what's your reaction to all this?
He must not have God in his life. He's sick, and I'm powerless over this situation.
Yeah. I was around her when this happened, and she just shifted. It was fast. I sat there for about an hour and watched her. Just her whole face would change. The fiance would just be. She was devastated for a little while, and then she turned to rage. Her whole facial features would change. Right? This person didn't even exist for a while. A few days before we saw the spiritual woman show up.
We're missing one.
The sex kitten.
There's got to be a Xena.
Well, yeah, there would be a Xena in here just like Rambo. The sex kitten initially went through this, I wasn't good enough, blah, 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 blah. And we soon saw in her, oh, there's a lot of other men out there. Daughter went through two stages too. Remember I told you, take each one and they've got a judge and a victim, right? So, I mean, I saw this thing lay out right in front. So then our whole deal was right inventory, right inventory, right inventory, and then pretty soon that one began to materialize. Now, because we're getting close to out of time, I want you to imagine this. Boy meets girl in AA. This is what you meet. Hi. Would you like to go out for coffee? Oh my God. Now imagine this, right? Because initially, when boy meets girl on AA campus, which two characters are pretty predominant fairly quickly? Well, no. The spiritual is the disguise. Yeah, the sexual energy.
Until the first Lord's Prayer, and then say, lead us not into temptation, and the sex goddess and the lover are right there looking at each other.
Yeah.
Right during the prayer.
And they get the whole thing going. Right? But, and then you get caught up in that intoxication, but pretty soon these other characters start showing up with all their subsequent belief systems and all their character defects and all. And then, I mean, I'm trying to imagine this because there's no integration in any of this, is there?
No.
See, I want you to think of your own lives. I want you to think of how real this is. You experience this as a state of being. And the reason why we're all exhausted in meetings at night is we get up, we start out as the spiritual man or woman. Because we're in AA, and of course we've got to do the 11th step, and we're going to do our prayer and meditation. And then we're in the shower, and the career person is already working. But I would talk about what we do. And you get in the car. Why do you think we have road rage? I don't get to work on time, and I mean, boy, I'm fighting for my life. I'm going to run you over to get to the job. I am my job. Now you're at work. Mm-hmm. Heaven forbid if you go to a noon meeting, that's really hard. Because you got to shift out of work into the... You ever go to a noon meeting? They settle down at 12:25 and at 10 to 1, they get crazy. Why? It takes 25 minutes to shift out of the work role into the spiritual man. And at 10 to 1, the worker... He's got to get back to work. Get it? And then you do that all day. And then you walk in the door. And she says hello. You got to shift out of work into this. And then you got to try and spend a little time there. Then you got to go to an AA meeting. Or maybe there's the sponsor. Or there's the... You go through the day and you believe that identifies you. You follow me? And they're all different. Right? But I mean, think about this. What are the odds? So what you got is boy meets girl in AA, right? So he's out, the sponsor's out working one night, and a little sex kitten, she's at home and she comes out. So now we have this holy man coming to bed with this sex kitten. I mean, what are the odds of those two ever meeting at the same time? You follow me? And then you imagine if you have kids into this. I think there's a reason 20% of Americans are said to have mental diseases nowadays. This is how I live my life. This is how you live your life. This is why resentments kill more alcoholics than anything else. Because if you do anything to hurt, threaten, or interfere with any of these states of being, I promise you, you'll experience this fighting for your life. How many of you lost your job? You go through some tough times behind there? Yeah. Your relationship that in? Money? One day you have it, one day you don't. You see what I mean when it says we're fighting for our lives? This is why we can't afford the luxury of resentments. Steps 4 through 9 allow integration. And these all dissolve. These all dissolve and go away. And at the 9th step, when you make amends, you disconnect from these in the 4th and 5th step. You connect with God in 7. You connect with your fellow brothers and sisters in 9. And these go away. 10 and 11, keep them away. Then you start to have fun. See, I'm in the role to play the role that God has assigned. I'm not attached to the role. Why? Because the role can change just like that. That makes sense?
Yeah.
What happens when the baby cries and they're making love?
Right? Give them all a hand. Thank you very much. Joe, you got any other comments? Or?
We can go on a couple minutes, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, here's the trick, though. There's a trick to that. The tendency of the ego is to get to the fourth cone. See, because he just described states when you're not at one. He was resentful about this, this, and this. She's resentful about this, and this, and this. They're not at one. They're not in their center. They're not in a fit spiritual condition. That's what you're writing about, or you wouldn't be writing. So you get to the fourth cone, and it starts to change. You pray. Where was I selfish? Not a check mark, written. This is where I was selfish. Selfish. I did this. You start to see the truth. Now, here's the interesting thing that we saw recently, because you had two that they could have been the same, could have been his girlfriend, and Kyle could have been the boyfriend, right? When two people, this is just a little side note, when two people in a relationship are writing about each other, his second column would have been her fourth column. And her second column would have been his fourth column. But the fucked up thing, each one, the right one didn't know the right truth about the right one. They need to find their own truth. She wrote, he's selfish, he lies, he does this, he does this. She was writing his fourth column. Uh-huh. He wrote, she did this, she did this, she lied about this, she did this. He was writing her fourth column. Something has to come together here, because they're having trouble with this personal relationship. You get to the fourth column, the ego's going to try a very interesting thing. You see a piece of truth, you see a piece of truth. But what I was trying to share with you earlier was, you can stay in the fourth column until he could have actually said to himself, my God, I'm not mad at her for her leaving or relapsing. I'm mad at myself for what I did with selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, and fear that drove her away, and she damn near had to relapse. Because I was doing this and this and this and this, and the opposite for the other person. But what the ego, until you can rewrite the first two columns, until the truth that you thought was the truth that you would have given your life for, I'm mad at her for doing this. Anybody during that time would have asked you, you know, when you're not at one during that week or that month that you stayed in it, are you mad at her for doing that? Absolutely. Are you sure you're mad at her for doing that? Absolutely. Are you sure that you're really mad because she left? Yes. I'll fight to the death. You're right in the fourth column, you're in the fourth column, all of a sudden you go, my God, I'm mad at myself for driving her away. And you can change the first two columns. But what the ego will try to do is this, and you've got to be very careful. In the fourth column, the ego will try to play so now I'll. And the so now I'll game goes like this. Rambo sees he's been a little rough. He needs to take a class on how to become a little more less aggressive. Two egos just got up and changed seats. Neither one were smashed. They just got up and changed seats. Mm-hmm. The whore thinks she needs to become a monk, a nun, right? The businessman needs to become more spiritual. They just change seats. They don't get smashed. Your AA needs to become a little more like Rambo, right? He goes to an assertiveness training class rather than a peaceful class. And he's running around, and all of a sudden you got a guy doing meditation, Tony Robbins, church, family picnics, and less AA. I mean, it doesn't matter what day. Each one's going to have another agenda. And so in the fourth column, and you wonder why you're running around to all these different self-help. Mm-hmm. My God, after what you've seen about self, what in the world is there to help? How are you going to help self? You want to see self destroyed. We must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. You believe that. So be careful during the fourth column that you don't just recreate yourself in your own image, because all you end up with is the people that you saw in the circle have changed seats, and they've all come up with a new third column. All you've done is generate a new third column. Don't try to come up with what God wants you to be when you've seen the truth. You just admit it. 6, 7, 8, you go to the person, you make amends. Now, if he described vividly, very graphically, right here in front of us, a state of being when you're not at one, I'm going to propose this question. Is it possible that if these personalities were smashed, they're going to reassert, they're going to be smashed, they're going to reassert, that's why we do 1 through 9 on a regular basis. Is it possible that if you got to oneness, you got to what the 9th and 10th step promises outline, is it possible in that state there is no such thing as a relationship? Only equanimity. Not that you're not closer to some people than others. But is it possible in the state of oneness there is love and understanding and compassion for each person and not a separate role for every relationship? Because he described a person who, when they go home to the family and mom and dad, the sister, the brother, and the lover are all in the room at the same time, he can't say a word. And he shuts up because he has a different role and a different belief system for each of those relationships, separate relationships in the room. Frank described a man for us. He became an AA speaker. And he fell victim to a belief that a lot of you think is true or have fallen victim to. Never say no to an AA request. Forget the wife, forget the kids, forget the family. Never say no to an AA request. Kill this man that I'm going to tell you about. Because he became an AA speaker. He was told by his doctor he needed to be in the hospital 6 p.m. for a morning appendicitis operation. He couldn't. He had an AA request. He had to go speak because he's a speaker. Appendix burst, ends up in the emergency room. Peritonitis, back then there's nothing they can do about it. You're going to die. It's going to take a long time. Frank would visit him in and out of states of consciousness. Awake, sleep, awake. And during those 16 days that Frank watched him die, he said each day almost, when he would come to consciousness, another personality would drop down by things he would say like this. He'd say, you know, Frank, I wasn't the greatest husband in the world, but you know what? I wasn't the worst. And he'd feel another one drop. And you know, I wasn't the greatest father in the world, but I wasn't the worst either. And he'd feel another one. And on, he said, this man took 16 days to get free, and he had to die to do it. We get to do it right here. It's about life and death when you're dealing with these personalities.
Mm-hmm.
So don't play the so now game in the fourth column.
There is a state you can experience, the big book talks about, the 10th step called the position of neutrality, in which you're the world to play the role that's been assigned to you, but you are not the role. And you can do that role with power and peace and the sense of direction. And it will change. You and I live in a world of impermanence, attached to God, attached to the moment, so you can only attach to the role. We destroy people's lives with these different roles and our need to think that they define us. We rob people of dignity and a lot of other things. Couple of comments. There's such a shift from when you're done writing the first three columns, I like to just call it a spiritual bridge. But it's back to this key to the future. And it starts to explain the key to the future, and here's what it is. It says that the people I wrote on in column one and what they did to me in column two are perhaps, I stress that word, spiritually sick. And they're going to start to introduce me to a concept. And the concept is, what does it look like when somebody's spiritually sick? It's a new concept for most of us. And it goes on to say that, though I don't like their symptoms, what they did in column two, and how that disturbed me, my third column, they, like me, are spiritually sick. So they tell me that a second time, then they give me a prayer, and then they go on and say, we need to avoid any retaliation or argument against this person, because that is now we treat a sick person. And it always brings up images in my mind of somebody dying of cancer or something, and they did something to me, would I be upset? Of course not. I would have great compassion and understanding. And they totally pull me away from this idea that this person is intentionally doing this to me. And then I said, I'm going to totally disregard this, and I'm going to ask myself, where am I selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, or afraid? See, if your inventory does not reveal to you that all your troubles are of your own making, you will never go through life with any sense of freedom. The gift that I know is that all my troubles are my own making, including my perception of things. And it's from this position you can love. It's from this position you can have compassion. I quit working with forgiveness years ago. Here's why. The part of me that would need to forgive no longer exists. Forgiveness is another trap of the ego. This says we're going to face and be rid of, with God's help, I can be entirely rid of self. You've got to get rid of that self that feels the need to forgive. What's there for to forgive? What's there for forgive if someone does something who's sound asleep, dreaming they're awake?
Yeah.
I mean, who's sicker, me or them? You follow me? So, it's powerful stuff. If you haven't written inventory for a while, I encourage you to write inventory. Have fun with inventory. Don't let it be arduous. Take a look at these stage characters you think define who you are. But have some fun with this stuff. Thanks, that's all I got.